On Hallow's Eve, the children would play, tricking and treating as hard as they may. On the streets of Rue Champlain and St. Luke they came, gleefully dancing with no one to blame. And so, without warning, came a frightful shriek, a darkened neighborhood to frighten the meek. And inside an embattled house within lived a devilish old Grinch named Marc Bergevin.
Chick-a-chee.
Well, hello, children. Happy Halloween. Here are some delicious treats for you.
Thanks, mister. Lettuce chips? And Saturn bar? What are these?
Get over it. Lettuce chips, they're just like potato chips. They're just not as tasty. Saturn bar? Saturn, Mars? What's the difference? They're both planets, aren't they? You know the best thing about these treats, kids? I found them at the bargain bin of the dollar store.
You stink.
Go F yourself. And you are?
I'm Golem. From Lord of the Rings. My mom did my makeup.
Golem, whatever. You look more like Lou Lamoriello. Beat it! God, look at you. What a lazy ass you are. What are you supposed to be, stupid head?
Okay, well, I'm wearing a sheet, so I'm probably a ghost.
Beat it! You look like a stupid ghost. Go disappear and scare people. You know what scares people and disappears as well as ghosts? My playoff chances.
Man, your Marc Bergevin is just the worst. He's just a mean brute.
Yeah.
Lock that guy up. He's got no business interacting with children.
Yeah, he's got a lot on his mind. He's not normally like that, but a lot on his mind with the current state of the team, of course.
Hey, man. Happy Halloween. Can you believe it? This is our official Halloween show.
It is. I've been looking forward to this for a very long time, you know, at least a couple days.
Well, and so have a lot of our fans, because this week they're just going to get chock full of Habs fan versus Leafs fan programming. We've got this awesome roundtable with Omar White and Andrew Merkshire coming up on Wednesday.
Mm-hmm.
And then we'll also be releasing our own personal Treehouse of Horrors, our best of show with all of our best sketches.
Yep, it's come to that already, hasn't it?
Can you believe it?
Yeah, I'm looking forward to it. It's going to be chock full, as you just said. Did you say chock full?
I don't know, I said something like that. Now I feel like chocolate. I feel like I want to go trick-or-treating. Sure could use a Saturn bar right now.
Yeah. It tastes just as good as a Mars bar, believe me.
Yeah.
Half the price.
Yeah, I'm sure.
Half the price. Yeah, that's going to be exciting, that roundtable with Berkshire and Mr. Omar White. And a lot of good things are on the horizon for Habs fan versus Leafs fan.
Well, and it's interesting because things sure have changed from our last show. If you think about the stuff we were talking about, you were basically ready to throw yourself off the Bloor Viaduct, and I was ready to go ahead and celebrate the next Stanley Cup won by the Maple Leafs 4 days later, and suddenly it's like teams trending in the exact opposite direction. The Habs are actually stringing together some victories, and the Leafs, for some reason, just aren't playing any defense whatsoever. It's really disappointing.
Mm-hmm. Well, Montreal hasn't really strung together anything. They beat the Florida Panthers and then lost to the Los Angeles Kings and then won again on the weekend against the New York Rangers.
Hey, man, half full, right? You got to start somewhere. I mean, you got to be pleased that they're actually picking up some victories against teams that are pretty tough.
Yes, tough might be a relative term considering that the goalies they beat were James Reimer and Andre Pavlik. But the good thing is that Montreal won two of their last three, which is, this is going to be a numbers thing now, 666 hockey. And what does Montreal need to do to qualify for potentially 95 points to make the playoffs based on the average last three seasons? 95 points. Montreal needs to play about 630, 628 hockey. So right now in the last three games, they're actually over that pace. So that's actually a good thing. We'll see what happens.
Look, That's a cool stat and all, but I'll tell you something. I like your position a lot better than mine. Let me give you some numbers. How about a 3.61 GAA and an 890 save percentage? Yeah, that's right. That's a horror show known as Freddie Anderson. At least Carey Price, I've got confidence in. He can steer you to a couple of winning streaks. I don't know if Freddie Anderson can win more than two games in a row the way he's been playing.
Yeah, there's a lot of heat on Freddie at the moment. But, I mean, is it a simple case as of the defense being somewhat porous? Or is Freddie looking bad? Is Freddie looking bad himself? I mean,
you know,
Don Cherry himself said, don't blame Freddie. On Coach's Corner over the weekend, he said, don't blame Freddie. He was blaming some of the lackadaisical amount of back-checking and, of course, the coverage. So, I mean, the great Don says, don't blame Freddie.
But the great Don also is probably watching an average of 2.5 minutes a game. Like, no offense to Don, but anyone who's watched Freddie Anderson put in a typical start has to be concerned that whenever the Maple Leafs need a big save in order to get back into a game, or are tied or even leading, he doesn't usually come up with it. He hasn't done it pretty much from the beginning of the season. Can you name one game that he literally stole? Maybe what, the opener against Winnipeg? When they had like 27 shots in the second period against the Leafs?
Yeah, that's probably it.
So a lot of work still to be done, but, you know, it's a young season. It's still really early. And I mean, tonight, the Leafs could end up losing again, and the next thing you know, on the next show, we'll have a sketch with, like, mortuary bells or something. I don't know. What's a mortuary bell, by the way?
I don't know. It could be... It's a very... We've got a very dark theme going on. Is it because it's Halloween, or are you talking about mortuary bells and ghouls and goblins?
Rest in peace, Vincent Price, man. Oh, I wish Vincent Price could come on our show. That would be the best.
That would be the best. Him and, you know, Griselda from that show. Hilarious House of Frightenstein. Oh, that would be the best. Wow.
Huge Canadian references, you know? It's a good thing this is a Canadian show.
Yes. Also listened to in China.
So, you know, I'm taking this opportunity to use some improv and spontaneously ask you, how the heck do you feel about Sergachev these days and what he's doing in Tampa?
I feel confused. I feel more mind-boggled. I don't understand how the Montreal Canadiens can have such a glaring need for left-handed, puck-moving defensemen when they had one in their organization. A young one, for that matter, with size and strength of a man much older than he currently is at 19, 20 years old. Also making rookie money, they traded him away to fulfill a need that wasn't fulfilled. I mean, Jonathan Drouin is playing center, I've said it before, by default. He's a center at default. So the Montreal Canadiens created a hole for a left-handed puck-moving defenseman by getting and acquiring essentially a winger in Jonathan Drouin. It's just, when I think about it, it makes my head hurt. He's a winger. Jonathan Drouin is a winger. Plain and
it
simple.
It does. It's almost like this kind of patchwork quilt effort to string things together and hope that they work, even though players haven't played in those positions. You look at the Maple Leaf side of things, this team can score, but this team is having a real hard time playing sound, fundamental defensive hockey. How many losses will it take before Lou Lamoriello and Brendan Shanahan go to Mike Babcock and say it's time to trade some of this depth, right? Like, shouldn't they do that? Wouldn't that just make sense when you've got the kind of depth they do?
Yeah, I think so. And again, all fingers point to that trade chip being JVR for the defensive help. Now, who is going to be the defensive help for the Toronto Maple Leafs? I don't know. But I'm hearing Nick Leddy's name being thrown about as a...
I'd take him. Yeah.
I definitely would take him too. Montreal apparently has interest. So yeah, I mean, maybe it's Nick Leddy. Who knows?
Well, one thing's for sure. We've got chock full of analysis on this show. Why? Because we've got not one, but two awesome guests coming up later on the show. Tony Ambrosio and J.D. Bunkus. How cool is that?
That's very cool. They're big fans of theirs as well. I like listening to them.
They're some of the most compelling sportscasters you can find, I think, in the business. And we've got them both here on Habs Fan vs. Leafs Fan.
Yeah, that's great. I think our fans are really going to find very interesting what they both have to say about the current state of hockey.
Which should be infinitely more interesting than the things Mark Bergevin said to those poor children at Halloween. Man, heartless.
Ah, those kids were hard on Mark. Go easy on him.
Our next guest is the co-host of Good Show with Ben Ennis and can be heard on Sportsnet The Fan 590. Welcome to the show, JD.
No sweat. How you doing, man?
Doing well. I wanted to have you on the show for a while now, and now that I've got you, we have to ask some serious questions about what's going on here on HVL. Let's start, JD, with asking you this. Between Vegas making the Leafs odds-on favorite to win the Cup now, and Mark Bergevin basically being on the cusp of losing his job, are there days you believe this is all just a strange dream?
Oh, of course, man. There's every single Leaf fan that has ever existed from, I would say, 1967 onward probably has a little bit of the, if you feel too comfortable, it means that the trapdoor is about to fall out beneath you. And I got to admit that my initial reaction to the Leafs being Vegas favorites or Stanley Cup favorites in Vegas was negative. It wasn't that, holy crap, look at this team, they're awesome, they're going to be great. If people think that they can win a Stanley Cup, it was, let's not jinx this, let's not get ahead of ourselves, we just got to chill out a little bit, man. Like, let's not forget about the Penguins, let's not forget about the Blackhawks, let's not forget about the Lightning. Let's just all reel this back in and try to appreciate what we have right now, which is a nice start and a young core that shouldn't be pushed along. So, yes, absolutely, there is a feeling of, is this real? Can this be sustainable? Are we really living in a world where the Maple Leafs are a top five team in the NHL? I would say this, though, is that I think that having that feeling is great. It's much better than the alternative, which is, oh, the team is never going to win. Nothing good ever happens to us. There's something waiting around the corner that's horrible because this team is just cursed and they're bad and they're awful. There's real signs of life here. There's real reason to be excited about this hockey team. And so many people who hate the coverage that the Toronto Maple Leafs get are usually justified. I understand that. If you're a fan of the Ottawa Senators and you've had an amazing team for, you know, the better part of the last, like, decade and a half, you were making runs at the Stanley Cup. You were one of the better teams in the Eastern Conference. And yet you start a season, and what are the questions about, right? Who will be playing next to Matt Sundin? How Gill has signed with the Toronto Maple Leafs, and that's dominating the headlines? That sucks. But for once, the Leafs are dominating headlines for justifiable reasons. So it's awesome, man. Honestly, it's very, very cool. But yes, there's, of course, reservations for a fan base that's been littered with horrible, horrible experiences for the last, like, what, 30 years, 40 years? So I would say that the Habs are a little bit more surprising because when you have Carey Price, it's just really hard to envision a way that the Habs lose games this way, this many games, all strung together in a row. I was always very skeptical of them going into the season because of the depth in the Eastern Conference, and I just didn't like that the idea was with this team, they needed goal scoring, and then they let the likes of Radulov leave, Markov leaves. Mm-hmm. You bring in Drouin, who I love, and that was how could you not like bringing in a guy like Jonathan Drouin, especially at the contract he got, but you still lose another young blue liner who everyone kind of expects to be a blue chipper, or the real deal, and someone who can provide a little offense. I'm not surprised the Habs are not a terrific hockey team out of the gate, but I am surprised at the record. You could always sell me on the Leafs as a young team that was hungry to get back after a great experience in the postseason last year, would come out with a lot of spunk. But yeah, the Habs start, not so much that they're not scoring goals, but the fact that they keep losing this many games, I'd say that's the most surprising thing. And if you want to say sustainable, though, I would say that the Leafs run is more unsustainable than the Habs. Both these things are going to find their level a little bit.
Now, it's interesting. Of all the people that I know in the business who've got their pulse on how fans are feeling about their team, whether it's baseball, hockey, basketball, it's clear that you've got a real rare and great perspective on things. But I'm wondering, assuming things continue at this torrid pace for the Leafs, do you envision Shanahan, and we call him fondly here on HBL, Uncle Lou, do you see them going all in to acquire the parts that they need at the deadline to make a proverbial long-term cup run? Or is that all premature considering really where this team is at and how controllable the young players really are?
Yeah, no, it's not premature because the players are controllable, right? You have a bunch of cap space right now. I think the Leafs have close to $5 million where they can add to their team as it's currently constituted. You're not going to have this depth going forward. Look at what just happened to Washington, the team that knocked them out. They lost Justin Williams. They lost Mojo, Marcus Johansson. He's off of their team. They ended up losing countless pieces from their blue line that just about any team would covet, right? And now with the Niskanen injury, that adds, that compounds that. But you can't lose that many guys and come back and still be the same team. The Leafs are in this unique position, as everyone knows, where you have a super talented team that's ahead of the curve, and it gives you space with the salary cap. And this works in all of sports, right? This pretty much every professional sports league is getting younger and younger. You're not waiting for your guys to be in the 27-year-old range before you can consider them winners. This is probably the best time that they've ever had, this year and the next. And not to say that that limits them going forward, but right now they have the most flexibility. So I don't think it's premature, because the team has shown signs that they would love to add a top four right-hand shot defenseman. They wanted to be in on Travis Hamonic. That was a real possibility for them. They just got outpriced because of draft picks. And I don't know if this team really wants to give up draft picks, because they probably think they have an advantage with the Hunters. And based on their draft record as of late, I could see the hesitancy to say, look at all the guys that we've nailed in terms of picks. Let's probably reel it back in that sense. The only flip side of that is, you really do have a lot of organizational depth right now. And some of those guys are going to have to come in and fill those holes, because, you know, you're going to lose a JVR. You're going to lose a Tyler Bozak in all likelihood, like if we have to get him. So you do have value in guys like Kasperi Kapanen, but you have so many forwards at the AHL level right now, so many pieces that other teams likely covet. For example, look at even a guy like Leipzig, right? He got taken by the Golden Knights, and he's on their second power play. And he wasn't someone here that was, I'm not trying to say that he's a star, but he's someone that I would say the vast majority of Leaf fans and maybe even the organization viewed as not a long-term piece of this team. And he's contributing at the NHL level. Like, he's a real player. He belongs here. He's not a fraud. I have to think that at some point later in the year, that if this team is looking to be one of the top teams in the Eastern Conference and a Stanley Cup contender, that they're going to have to go, quote-unquote, all in, where they decide, you know what, we might have to sacrifice a first-round pick and a top-level prospect or two because there's a defenseman available. They're not going to do that for someone like Mike Green, right, an unrestricted free agent that shoots right-handed and can play on your power play and gives you some of the things that the team covets. But yes, if there's a player of Hamonic's ilk, and again, I'm not going to speculate who that player is because I have no idea who's going to be available. Yeah. It's so early to guess that part of the equation. But yes, if a team comes calling and says, we have a veteran player that can help your team right now and might be on your team for a couple of years going forward, even if that's one or two, right, this year and next, what is the price that you're not willing to give up? And for a team that has a ridiculous amount of forward depth, especially on the wing, if that's the asking price, I don't really see how they end up saying no, because look at the defense corps right now. They've got three guys, I would say, that they really like. They've got Ron Hainsey, who they signed and who has been solid early on, but I don't think that you're staking your season on making sure Ron Hainsey stays in the top four of your group. Connor Carrick, as nice as he is as a sixth defenseman, you can improve there. And Andreas Borgman and Cali Rosen, those two guys have shown a lot of, I would say, they've showed some rookie mistakes early on. And yes, they'll get better, and you'd like to have that organizational depth. It's better than having the Marchenkos come in to have a young player that you think has a ceiling. But in terms of competing right now, do I see this team entering the playoffs with Cali Rosen or Andreas Borgman over potentially a veteran that you're going to add at the deadline? I would say that if I had to bet, it's going to be the latter, that they're going to add something.
How ironic, isn't it then, JD, that we go from talking about an embarrassment of riches when it comes to forward talent and searching for a right-handed puck-moving defenseman to the other side of the equation in Montreal, where a profound absence of left-handed puck-moving defenseman, a.k.a. Markov and Sergachev, have put the Habs in a position where they have to rely on that all too ubiquitous aphorism of elite goaltending. Is that going to save them this year, JD? Will they be able to rely on price in lieu of this lack of depth to keep them afloat through these tough times?
Yes. And I say yes because he's shown over and over again that it doesn't really matter what team is in front of him. How many times have we seen a hot goalie steal a playoff series? I do think it's going to be more difficult. It's hard to envision a situation where the Habs win the Stanley Cup as they're currently constituted, because what I don't know what the number is exactly, but I believe there is a stat that says a goalie that's been making over $5 million or over $6 million has never won a Stanley Cup, because it just takes away from too many other places on the team. But Carey Price is a totally different story. He's a generational goaltender. He still holds the belt as the best guy in the league. And if you say right now, look at the Habs struggles and the start of the season, let's pretend, and this is such a lame cliche when you say, well, if the playoffs started today, but really, if the playoffs started today, do you think that the Habs would be the team that no one picks that everyone picks to face? Do you think that the Habs would be the team that everyone looks at and says, you know what, we feel comfortable playing this team because they don't have some goal scoring yet, or they don't have that left-hand shot defenseman that's moving the puck and getting zone entries right now? They'd say, hell no, man. I don't want to play the goddamn Carey Price team. Are you kidding me? That guy's going to steal four games, no sweat from us. We're going to look like idiots if we play this team. I still think that they would be one of the worst matchups for a lot of teams just because Carey Price is so ridiculously incredible, and he's proven it over and over and over again that he can win you a game against just about anybody. Like, that team stunk last year, the Habs again. Like, their team was no good. They didn't have an amazing group of forwards. They didn't have when you're saying Alexander Radulov is maybe your second best forward last year, that's not the best hockey team. And I know he had a good year, but that's not a team that you're just completely intimidated by. You're intimidated because the guy in the crease is one of the most revered players in the NHL. So, absolutely. Yeah. The Habs can turn it around. I'm terrified of the Habs if I'm any team going into a playoff series, because look at Montreal right now. The shooting percentage is low, right? They're still getting a ton of shots in net. Think water's going to find its level for them. They're not going to be the last place team in goal scoring in the NHL. But one thing that is a constant with them is their goaltending. And so if I'm a team that runs into a little bit of a slump like Montreal, where our shots aren't going in, we just are having a couple of bad games, I'm certainly not playing against the team that has Carey Price in that. So, yes, I think Montreal will be around the bubble of getting into the playoffs, but I definitely think that they are more than capable of winning a Stanley Cup when you have a guy like Carey Price in that who's healthy.
Why don't you tell our listening audience what you're up to and where they can find you on social media?
Yeah, so you can just follow me at JD Bunkus. I'm pretty sure that's my Twitter handle and my Instagram. So both of those are good there. I host Good Show 1-4 every single day on the Fan 590 with Ben Ennis, which is a real treat of mine. I do miss the producing a little bit, but it's a new challenge for me. So, but yeah, you can always find me 1-4 on the Fan 590. And if you'd like some hoops talk, I do the Free Association NBA Raptors podcast for Sportsnet too.
Be sure to catch JD Bunkus on the afternoons on the Fan 590. JD, I appreciate you for taking the time to stop in and visit with us here at Habs Fan versus Leafs Fan.
No sweat. It was my pleasure, Ari. Thanks for having me, man.
My next guest does excellent work with TSN and the OHL. He's a celebrated broadcaster, host, reporter, and writer who's been in the business for over two decades and is a household name around these parts. Tony Ambrosio is on Habs Fan versus Leafs Fan. Tony, thanks for joining our show.
Hey, thank you so much for having me, Ari. I really appreciate it.
Tony, it's 2017, and I don't need to necessarily worry about you appreciating the passage of time with the sport of hockey in this city and being someone who's so closely linked on so many media fronts. Let me ask you this. What are you making of the media hype right now surrounding the Maple Leafs Canadiens paradigm when it comes to cup runneth over and glass completely empty?
Yeah, that's a fantastic question. And it just shows you the passion of the two fan bases. And I think it's really interesting, because let's be honest, for the last decade, the Habs have had very good success. Have they won a Stanley Cup? No, but they've had great success over that last decade run, a couple of Eastern Conference finals, great goaltending, some really celebrated seasons. Whereas the Maple Leafs, well, outside of 2013 and the heartache with Boston, they have done diddly squat. And you know what, Ari? I really believe that Maple Leaf fans, and maybe I'm wrong, tell me if I'm wrong, I think Maple Leaf fans really want to get really obnoxious on social media and kind of give it to the Habs fans. But I think they realize we're only a couple of weeks in, and they're afraid that this bubble will burst. So I believe, and maybe again I'm wrong, that Leafs fans are holding in their obnoxious behavior because they know that things can change on a dime and can change in a hurry. But deep down, Leafs fans are loving it. They are savoring it. And I really believe, too, Ari, that Leafs fans have been begging Leafs management for years to do what they've done, to blow it up, to be bad for a couple of years, to get high draft picks, and it's paying off. And you look at William Nylander. Go back to that draft. Michael Dell Cole and Jake Virtanen were taken ahead of Will Nylander at 8. Now, it's not to say those two players will never be NHL stars, but it appears Nylander is a star. When they drafted Mitch Marner at 4, Dylan Strome was taken at 3. And, you know, Strome has struggled to reach the NHL. Whereas Marner, outside of a struggling start this year, has proven he's a capable NHLer. And, of course, getting number 1 with Matthews, it's really paid off. Those three young players really have just shot, I think, the Leafs' rebuild ahead a couple of seasons.
Well, and I think you'll agree that that's perhaps where we're getting some of this extraordinary outburst of maybe completely irreconcilable enthusiasm to such a level that fans today, especially long-suffering fans like myself and you throughout the years, following this organization as kids, teenagers, adults, and now we'll call ourselves mature adults. Now we look at this team and we say we have a number one bona fide, not just superstar, but a player who's being mentioned in different circles as being a top three player in the league. We have functional special teams that are now chugging along at a rate of 30% on the power play. And all you have to do now is look down in Vegas and see that the Leafs have somehow become the number one odds on favor to win the Stanley Cup. At one point, Tony, do you ask yourself, is this all just a crazy dream?
Yeah, you know, I think that's a fair question, and I think that's why Leafs fans are kind of tempering their enthusiasm just a little bit because they worry the bubble will burst. But you know what, are we? I don't think this is a dream. I think when you draft kids like Marner and Matthews and Nylander top 10, they should be good players. And now we're seeing the reaps of the terrible years after 2013. And I really believe that when Brendan Shanahan took over and decided we are going to try to finish last, I think their sole intent was to try to get a star player in Connor McDavid. Well, they got another star player in Matthews instead. So the decision to blow it up, to tank, to be bad has really paid dividends, and we're seeing the fruits of that labor now. And I just want to add this, and tell me if you agree with me. I don't think the Leafs have had a player as good as Auston Matthews ever. And I say that with great respect to Dave Keon going back to the 60s, with great respect to Matt Sundin in the 2000s. Yes, fantastic player. But you can make the legitimate argument that Auston Matthews is top 3 in the NHL already as a recently turned 20-year-old. 20 years of age, you could make the argument he's top 3 in the NHL. And with all due respect to Keon and Sundin, that wasn't the case when they were playing.
I'm inclined to agree with you, especially I think you'll agree with me that if you think back pound for pound who the most talented player, every pore on his skin, every inch of his skate and everything that was the complete package. Now, granted, they didn't get this player in his prime, but I always thought that Alexander McGillney was, in fact, the most talented police player that this audience in this local city could appreciate. What do you think about that?
I agree with you. The thing, though, he played the wing. And as my good friend Jeff O'Neill will tell me at TSN, there is no harder position to play. And yes, goalie is a lot of pressure, and yes, defense, but it is center. Because you are asked to play the old, if I could use the old cliche from hockey coaches, a 200-foot game. And it is tough to play a 200-foot game when you are not playing center. But if you are a center, you've got to play both ends of the ice to be considered a star. And Auston Matthews does that so well. Does he have a great shot? Absolutely. Does he play solid defense? 100%. But what really impresses me, and I know I'm kind of a hockey geek when I say this, it's his puck retrieval skills. He never seems to lose the puck. If there's a battle for the puck, he seems to invariably come away with it. So while McGillney was a dynamic talent, I just think I don't think we've ever seen a better player and may never see a better player. And I know this sounds hyperbolic, but Auston Matthews just does so many things that just, it's funny, Harry. I know I'm rambling, but I've got friends in Pittsburgh, and I always give them a hard time. You guys had Lemieux. You guys had Yager. You guys had Sidney Crosby and Malkin. And what have the Leafs have had the past 20 years? Matt Sundin and McGillney and who? And I kind of joke with them. You know, we're stuck with the John McIntyres and the Tyler Bozaks and the Carl Gunnarssons of the world. Well, you guys in Pittsburgh got these four high-end, dynamic Hall of Fame players. And finally, it's the Leafs' turn to get a Mary Lemieux-like, a Sidney Crosby-like player and off the map.
No question. And I think you'll agree, Tony, there's a lot to be said as well by many of the unheralded components of this hockey club that, without getting into a kind of love fest or gush fest on the show, which I'm sure my partner Hampson is probably cringing as he's going to listen to this footage, what does it say that picks that went unheralded like Nazem Kadri and Morgan Riley, and when I say unheralded, not so much in that at the time they were drafted, they both received massive media hype, but now you're looking at the gradual evolution, maturation of the Rileys, of the Kadris, the depth elements of a JVR and a Tyler Bozak that were parts that, let's face it, 2 years ago, Tony, if we were having this conversation, we'd be talking about reclamation projects. And then you throw in a sprinkle of Connor Brown, who's one of, if not the most unheralded players in the NHL, being lost in the Austin Matthews triumvirate effect with Marner and Nylander. What does it say that you and I are now basically talking about a team that has all the components to compete today and then some?
And who would have thought that a couple of years ago when Mike Babcock took over and said there's going to be pain? They have really elevated the process. Look, I think a couple of other things too have helped the Maple Leafs. Getting Zaitsev as a free agent from Russia, he does so many little things very well. And you mentioned Connor Brown. That was a sixth-round pick. A sixth-round pick who is scoring more than 20 goals a season in the NHL. And then you've got Zach Hyman, who they got in the trade from Florida for Greg McKay. Greg McKay, a fine NHL player. But Zach Hyman has proven to be a very key contributor. You add that to the free agent pickups. You add that to the likes of Komarov and Bozak and Van Riemsdyk and the maturation, not only of Riley but of Jake Gardner. And you have a team. But I can't believe I'm saying this, Ari, because I know people in Toronto think I'm just full of Maple Leafs. I bleed blue and white. But this team is a legitimate Stanley Cup contender. And I never would have thought I would have said that, even as soon as a month ago. But based on how they're playing, based on the things that I'm seeing from other teams around the league, I really believe they are a Stanley Cup contender in 2018. And I never would have thought that as recently as a few weeks ago.
Now, quickly taking a look at the other side of the equation with the Montreal Canadiens, how would you anticipate where they'll be going next into November and December, knowing that they've started and put themselves in such a mathematical pit?
Yeah, like history shows that most of the teams that make the playoffs are in playoff positions by U.S. Thanksgiving. So let's see where the Habs are by U.S. Thanksgiving before we kind of get a real true sense of, you know, what kind of team they are. I don't think the fact that they're only scoring 4% of their shots will continue. That's well below the average. Usually the average is like 9 or 10% of your shots you score. So I expect that to go up. I expect Carey Price to, you know, to pick up his game just a bit too. I think Galchenyuk and Drouin will be better, especially Galchenyuk, as the season goes along. To me, to watch for with the Habs, does Marc Bergevin make a huge deal? Dave Poulin from TSN was mentioning he had a feeling that something big might be brewing. Nothing's happened as we speak right now. But I wonder if in the next week or two, something big doesn't happen. Because I believe Bergevin and Claude Julien, the head coach, believe they have a very good team that right now is underperforming. I don't know if they're deep enough down the middle, but I do like their goaltender. And to me, that can make a, you know, make up for a lot of mistakes. But I wonder if Bergevin will feel it necessary to pull the trigger on a big trade to help his team get back to where I think many thought they would be before the season began.
Well, and I think we can both agree, Tony, that coming on a podcast named Habs Fan versus Leafs Fan, it's probably a good idea for this rivalry to be one that's worth its salt. I mean, if this team, if the Habs bottom out in a few weeks and the Leafs continue this torrid pace, what will it say for the remaining five matchups in this regular season?
Yeah, it certainly will take some of the excitement away from it, won't it? I mean, I think the juice will always be there for Habs and Canadians. But, you know, you go back to that first meeting at Montreal, goodness, the place was buzzing. There was a lot of energy. Both teams are really into it. It kind of had a, I know it's only, you know, early October, but it had a playoff-type feel. So you really want to see both teams do well. And if you are Rogers, the rights holders in Canada, could you imagine what a playoff series, whether it's the first, second, or third round, between Montreal and Toronto would do in terms of buzz, viewership, advertising dollars? Oh, my goodness. It would be off the charts. I know basketball is getting big in this country, as is baseball, as is MLS soccer, but nothing, and of course the Raptors, the NBA, but nothing would beat a Montreal-Toronto playoff series as far as ratings and buzz. It would also be great for the players because that would generate so much revenue, and it'll be great for the owners because the salary cap would then go up. And to me, nothing helps the salary cap more than strong Canadian teams and a strong Canadian dollar.
And, of course, an ownership group, in the case of MLSC, that must be tickled pink, that their offerings are firing on all cylinders right now, and that'll make for
absolutely
a social media explosion that we haven't seen the likes of yet, my friend. Tony, tell our listeners what you've been up to and where they can find you on social media.
Sure. I teach a couple of days a week at the College of Sports Media, do some radio broadcasting, TV broadcasting, reporting and interviewing, and I work as well at TSN, working at the TV station in the newsroom, putting stories together and highlight packs together, and really enjoying that. And I can be reached on Twitter at Tony_Ambrosio.
His name is Tony Ambrosio, celebrated broadcaster, host, reporter, and writer. Thank you, Tony, for taking the time to join Habs Fan vs. Leafs Fan.
My pleasure, Ari. Anytime.